1, 2, 3. Hey, welcome to the Quick Fast Podcast, where you don't know who you are.
And neither do we. How's it going there, number three?
It's going, that's for sure. How are you doing, number nine?
I'm doing pretty good. One slight problem, though. A few days ago, I was shopping at Marshall's, trying to save a few bucks, but stay fly.
Right.
Which is really what Marshall's is all about.
It's balance.
It really is. You know, you go into Marshall's. They have a lot of stuff.
Yes.
They have a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of tacky stuff.
Way more tacky than good most of the time.
Yeah, but they have a fair amount of really good stuff at a very good price.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to be willing to treat it like a yard sale.
Right.
You show up, poke your nose in, lift up something, look over there. Things are never in the right size.
And you might not see anything on the first time. You might go back two times later and find everything you were looking for, your heart's desire.
It's true. And I would be curious to know how stuff actually ends up at those types of stores. You know, the outlet stores that aren't called outlet stores.
I'm pretty sure, other than the direct route to the outlet store from manufacturers, that it's local department stores that just get rid of stock they haven't sold that they've reduced prices for. They end up at a Marshall's or a TJ Maxx.
Wouldn't it be cheaper just to lower the price and keep it in the store?
I don't
until
know.
Until you sold it to the customer?
I have zero clue whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't know either. Well, nevertheless, I'm getting some leftovers, you know, from other stores at Marshall's, and I'm committing to black socks and black underwear.
Can't go wrong at a Marshall's with black and black.
Right. And I found that, you know, as a kid, everything's white. All of your undergarments are white. Wear white socks, you wear white, you know, underwear.
It's dangerous territory, white underwear, for a kid especially.
Yes, for anybody.
The kid is the most likely, other than the geriatric, to soil oneself.
Not only that, kids, they're running outside without shoes on whenever, however, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember being a kid. I had no respect for socks.
None whatsoever. Mine always ended up with holes in them. We'd be wrestling, even on carpet.
And you had a pair of socks that had holes in them that you would still wear.
No one told me I was supposed to get rid of them.
Right.
I mean, what do I know?
Yeah, you just keep going. As long as they kept coming out of the wash and showing up in the drawer, you kept wearing
them. That's shoddy parenting. That's the first step. That's the first thing. If you get your socks back, kids, if you're listening, and they've got holes in them, you need to either call DCFS or at least keep an eye open, because something else is going on.
Yeah,
there.
These parents might not be the best role model.
No,
if
not
they're
for
giving you.
You
back that holy sock,
mm-mm.
Because their radar is bent.
Yeah.
And if you stick around them long enough, you already got a bad genetic hand, obviously. Your radar is probably going to end up more askew than it should be. You're going to be going northeast thinking it's north. You're going to be dating a girl thinking she's sane, and she's going to be batshit crazy.
Oh, God.
So, all right. So, I'm in Marshall's, and I'm in a Marshall's. It's kind of like to the west of Chicago. Not really a terrible neighborhood. Not really a great neighborhood, just to kind of set the stage. And I'm not referring to ethnicities or whatever. It's a pretty, you know, uniformly mixed area. But I have heard that there's some trouble at the mall nearby, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So anyhow, it's not a big deal to me. I'm perfectly comfortable. Everyone else seems perfectly comfortable. And I'm going to Marshall's and I'm trying to do my thing. Some black socks, some black underwear. I go in and I find what I think I might like for underwear. But here's the deal. With the black underwear, I'm getting away from the cotton ones because I'm going boxer briefs.
Right.
And the cotton ones, the legs stretch out.
Mm-hmm. And they ride up.
Yes. So what I'm doing is getting like Under Armour type apparel that's, you know, that like stretch fit, a little bit of spandex, whatever. Okay. Now, I find some that I like. I find them in my size, which, by the way, different underwear is different waist size. Sometimes a medium is a 34, 36, and sometimes a large is a 34, 36.
I've been burned that way with the smalls and the mediums.
Oh, geez. They need to get a uniform code on that.
Well, and they put, like, usually on the sticker, it's like small, waist 28 to 34.
Sometimes, though, it's on the back, and if you just bought a medium the other day, you buy a medium again, it's not the same.
And it could be the same brand, different size. There's no consistency.
It's terrible.
If you're listening, underwear manufacturers, let's get some consistency. Let's... let's open the lines of communication between departments and brands, and let's get this fixed.
I really, really feel like this is where the government should step in and make sure there's a uniform code. I mean, they do all sorts of stuff that we don't need them to do.
Yeah.
How about making sure that our underwear manufacturers give us the same label for the same waist size? Medium is 34 to 36, or it's not.
While we're there, why don't we make sure everyone's measuring the same measurements in clothing anyway? Because I shouldn't buy a size 33 waist in jeans in this brand and have it fit amazingly, and then buy a size 33 in this brand and have it fall completely off like I'm wearing overalls.
What about shirts? Sometimes an extra large will be super baggy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll fit me perfect. Then sometimes a large will look like I'm stuffed into a kid's shirt.
Yeah.
And sometimes it'll be perfectly fine. Ugh, anyhow.
I had a conversation, not to take another
aside. Yeah, let's go ahead.
I had a conversation with a woman at, I think, Nordstrom's the other day. We shop at slightly different
stores. Slightly classier than Marshall's.
We shop at slightly different stores.
Nordstrom's. I've never heard of that.
The odd thing is, one of us has a job.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm looking at dress shirts, and it seems like every dress shirt that I see and I like is $90 or more dollars.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
Because those, I like to get, if I'm going to wear a dress shirt, I don't want it to look like I bought a $5 dress shirt. So, you know, you see them a lot in the movies when the guy's got the double Windsor knot and the beautiful shirt. That's the kind of stuff I want if I'm going to be dressing up. Can't afford it, but that's what I want. So I'm looking around, I'm talking to a buddy that I'm shopping with, talking about how I can't find a shirt I like for less than $90. And I don't buy them. I'd like to add that in. And associate in the store, she comes up and she says, can I help you find anything? I go, well, I'm just looking at dress shirts. I tend to like the woven look and that. And she goes, yeah, and you probably want like a slim fit. Mm-hmm. And I look at her and I go, now what would make you think a person like me would want a slim fit? No laugh whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Just deadpan. And then she starts giving me the whole rundown. Some have a slim fit, some have a cut fit, and some have this fit.
Yeah.
Give it all one call. Yeah. Well, you call it all one thing. And, but, you know, the normal dress shirt doesn't fit human beings. It fits balloons or something. I don't know what.
That's not right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I have a long cut, and sometimes those will be baggy instead of just lengthened.
Yeah. And then, so, then for me to get a shirt that's already $90, now I've got to get the slim fit. Well, the brands that make the slim fit are even fewer
more
and expensive, far between.
Yeah. Your Calvin Klein's, yeah.
So I'm stuck with parachute-y dress shirts until something turns around. So,
well, good luck with that.
I know.
Speaking of turning around, I'm going to flip it back to my story I'm in Marshall's.
Well done.
West Side Chicago, blah, 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 blah. All right. So I'm looking for underwear. I find some that I think I like. Now, are they cotton? Are they spandex? They're in the box. And so I'm looking at them, and I'm a serious buyer. Like, I'm in there to buy black underwear.
I've shopped for socks and underwear with you before, and it takes time.
Yeah, oh, I'm going to walk out of there with a quality thing, or I'm not walking out of there with anything.
Right.
So I grab the underwear, and I'm looking at them, like, oh, this is pretty sweet, but I don't know if they're cotton or spandex, right? And it says it has a little bit of spandex in it, but then I'm thinking, that could just be the waist. There's no guarantee that there's actually spandex in the material that's covering the box.
You do have a good point. I never would have thought of that.
Right. So, I proceed to pop open the lid on the box so I can feel the material.
That was my next move.
Okay. I'm thinking that's what a normal human does. So, while I'm doing that, I pop it open, and they got like this weird feel like I can't tell if they're cotton or if they're spandex.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they can make some soft, stretchy cottons that'll fool you.
Right. And because over time, those aren't going to hold up. Nope. I've been there. I've done it.
I've got some right now.
Balls hanging.
Riding up.
Yeah.
Riding
all right. Up. Yep. Okay.
Not good.
So I pull it out a little bit more, and by this time I got it practically all the way out of the box. And I'm kind of feeling on it, trying to figure out what's going on. This dude working there comes walking by. He's like 5'8", happened to be Hispanic guy, and he's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, says it like that. I go, "I'm looking at these underwear." And he, you know, thinking he's like offering me help, you know, I'm just
usually
thinking like,
they would be.
Right, I'm thinking like, nah, I'm all good. And he goes, you can't take it out of the box. And I go, I'm just trying to see what the material is. And he's like, you just look on the back of the box. I go, I know, I looked there, I just couldn't tell like what the fit was, if they were like a stretch fit or whatever. And he's like, you can't take it out of the box. And I get the sincere vibe that he thinks I'm going to steal these underwear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just were. By the way he's looking at me, he's looking at me like, you piece of garbage. You were just going to steal these underwear. And the other thing that was messed up, these underwear happened to be on an end display. So I'm in, the middle of like a four-corner stop in Marshall's holding the underwear. And I kind of look at him, and I wanted to get into it with him like, listen, I was going to buy these underwear. You shouldn't approach people like they're trying to steal. And how am I supposed to know? By the way, you got all this shit. It's Marshall's. It's
every
shit.
Box at Marshall's is ripped. Open.
Right. And instead, I just looked at the guy, and I go, all right, my bad. And at that point in time, he realized that I wasn't going to steal it. And so he gave me like, I'm sorry. And he just like hands the underwear back to me. Because he had like taken it from me when he was like, you can just look on the box. He like took it out of my hand like I was a little kid. But it was one of those weird deals. And I stopped to think to myself, like, was he doing this because of where the store is? Is he doing this because it's a Marshall's? Is he doing it because I look like the type of guy that would steal a two-pack of underwear?
He's doing it because your life is one big customer service nightmare. That's why he's doing it.
It is. We remember the Xbox incident.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. And, you know, I happen to be a white guy. And I'm thinking, is this, like, what it feels like to be a minority? Like, do you get that all the time from the clerk? Because I'm thinking some of it might have just been with, like, where he's at and what he's used to with mm-hmm. work. You know, it's not the, you know, there are marshals that are more higher end than other marshals.
Right.
It's weird. There's a huge variance.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's at one that's not the highest of high. Maybe he's just used to degenerates trying to rip the place off. But, I mean, this kid was, like, 20 years old, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Tops. And he's going to be the enforcer, and he's going to, like, you better not. You know, like, it's his freaking underwear, the other thing is. But I felt really, really bad, and I felt very angry, and I felt as though I had been abused in some capacity.
Yeah, well, you hate to be assumed to be worse off or a worse person than you are. But
the same thing, I can remember the same thing happening when I was a kid. Like, when you were a kid and you go into, like, the general store, they kind of peek out and they follow you around if you're in there without a parent and you're 10 years old. Like, oh, when you're 10, you're by yourself, you must be here to steal something.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, you know, a quarter of an inch tall. Like,
oh, yeah.
This guy looked at me looking at these underwear, and he thought that I was going to steal the underwear. And I'm not mad at him. For a second, I wanted to get into it with him, and then I just stopped and thought, hey, from his perspective, he just saw a guy taking the underwear out of the box, and I was like, sorry. But, I mean, I was red-faced, I was embarrassed. It was an uncomfortable ordeal.
Yeah, I remember it bringing back to the kid thing. My parents used to take us, I had two siblings, have two siblings, and they used to take us to, you know, whatever store. A lot of times, it seems like we spent a lot of time in Sport Mart. And then we spent a lot of time, at least on one instance, at a Borders Books. Okay. A big Borders Books with like an elevator and a couple of levels. And I remember at Sport Mart, we would always end up getting in trouble, both me and my sister. I'm not sure if my brother was involved. And we would always get in trouble for playing on the exercise equipment. And my parents would just let us run rampant. You
it's
know,
a big store.
They would spend hours looking at clearance shoes. Meanwhile, we're just running all over, playing with weights and stuff. They're toys to us, you know? We'd get yelled at, and then they'd bring us back to our parents, and, oh, yeah, we'll watch them, and then we'd go off again. And this happened probably weekly. And then one time we were at a Borders, and we were just, like, flipping through books. And this one guy, and we were probably 8 years old. It's not like we're hooligans or running around. But this one guy just came up and just started yelling at us, like, it's not a library, where are your parents, all this other stuff. And we went and got our parents. I don't know if they did anything, but it's like, that's one of those things, if somebody did that to my kid, somebody'd be getting an ass chewing.
You pussy.
Oh, yeah.
You were out of line. You were a punk-ass kid running around.
I was not a punk-ass kid.
Going through a bunch of books.
I was a cute little toe-headed blonde kid.
Yeah, I don't believe any of that.
I was.
Yeah, that's what a liar would say. But you're flipping through the books. His job is to make sure you're there to buy something.
My parents were going to buy it.
Yeah.
Dual audience, motherfucker.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I was just thinking to myself, I felt so awkward in this Marshall's instance, as I'm sure you did as a kid when you got yelled at and you didn't think you were doing anything wrong, even though you maybe were. And I didn't really deserve it.
Yeah.
And I felt super embarrassed. Now, I can remember, like, my senior year of high school, my friends and I used to go to the Kmart. And we used to ride around bicycles in the Kmart. Like, we'd take the little toddler bikes off the shelf, and we'd just start racing each other around, and we'd run into each other, and we'd knock each other down. And sometimes we would throw, like, boxes of, or not, you know, the bags of toilet paper, the jumbo pack? Mm-hmm. We'd just throw them at each other.
Why wouldn't you? You can't get hurt.
Right. But we would do that, and then they'd just be like, hey, knock it off, blah, blah, blah. We just, you know, we'd leave. I didn't feel embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like, because I deserved
it. You should have gotten
it. Yeah, I knew I was going to get yelled at and kicked out. I deserved it. And they'd be like, we're calling the cops, bro. And I was like, okay, fair enough. And but this time at Marshall's where I was just looking for some new black underwear, I felt so belittled.
There is something to the whole being treated in a worse way than you deserve.
Yes.
And it's even to me, and I'm sure to everyone, is the most outrageous. It cuts to my quick so fast. I mean, like I've explained to you in the past, I feel like inside my head, like way down deep, is just a raging psychopath, you know?
Perfectly and normal.
Yeah, and I've structured all these wonderful little things around the psychopath to kind of keep it at bay, so that way when someone ticks me off, I can sort of like, ooh, just pass it around this way and justify their actions this way. But then every once in a while, somebody just gets right through the bramble
like
bush.
Like the person who honked at us that we talked about
last
episode.
Yep, just like in episode 4.
Yeah, the guy who lays on the horn. It went right to that immediate, you're fist pumping, flipping him on
the finger. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think everyone has that. And it's so weird, too, to think about it, because it's the context in which you've developed the situation determines what your brain thinks is appropriate reactions from other people.
Mm-hmm.
For me, just looking at the underwear or someone doing anything where they presume they're innocent and they get treated as though they're doing something wrong or inappropriate, it offends you, it bothers you, yeah. It perturbs you. Whereas when you know you're doing something wrong, you expect to get in trouble, you expect to get yelled at, you expect to get disciplined in some fashion. It is one of the worst things in the world where, like, you think you're helping someone and someone comes at you with a bunch of attitude and you're like, well, fuck you. I'm just trying to help. Fuck off. Do it on your own.
And then have you ever been in a position where you're an authority figure and then you catch someone doing something they shouldn't be doing and they get mad at you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that.
Right? Yeah, it's like they should know what they're doing is wrong. Yeah.
Quit climbing on the fence, kid, you know? Yeah, fuck you. What? No, just quit climbing on the fence. Don't fuck me. Fuck you. But you can't say fuck you. Because then, of course, if you're in charge of anyone, you're supposed to apparently be professional and nice and kind. Oh, geez, you can't get ahead.
And the reaction of kids to call the police. This is something that is an epidemic in America. This is what I hear little kids all the time. They'll yell, I will call the police. I'll tell my mom we'll call the police, blah, 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 blah. I don't know if this is a generational thing or what, but from somewhere like from the early 90s to the 21st century, it turned into like, if you were getting picked on or beat up, you just dealt with it to, I'm calling the police.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what went down, but I hear kids do that all the time. Like, a kid will throw a rock at your car. You get out of the car. I'll call the cops. Don't touch me. Like, I've had stuff like that happen to friends of mine before. Like, you threw the rock at the car, you little punk ass.
I remember one time we were driving home from one of our long shopping excursions, and we were in this van that we had. And some kids threw snowballs at the window of the van. My dad pulled over the van, got out and chased him down. He ended up losing him. Like,
snowball.
Yeah, and today, I mean, well, today the attitude is, don't get out, they might have a gun.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember that. Well, and his justification was, well, it could have had a rock in it. And it's like, you're driving a van. No matter what van you're driving, maybe now they've got nicer vans. I guess they do. But back in the 80s, when you're driving an Astro van, you're not driving a luxury vehicle,
no. You
know? So, yeah, well, and when we were kids, we used to do that when we were talking to other kids, like, you know, they'll threaten you, like, I'll do this. No, you won't. I'll call the cops.
I'll call the cops.
But it never went anywhere, and you never were going to call the cops. It was just one of those, I'll call the cops on you, and it never went anywhere. But that was just to little kids that we would do that.
See, but I've heard little kids, when they're acting like punks, you know, you go, knock it off, motherfucker. And they'll be like, I'll call the cops on you, don't touch me. Like, that's their move while they run away.
Me.
Yeah, they'll, like, run away, like, you're going to beat them up. And
that's something they learned in some program somewhere.
Yes. The calling the cop thing is not when you are the villain.
No.
It's when you're the victim. If you're the villain and someone's just responding to your inappropriate, illegal behavior, you don't get the right of way to call the cops.
But one thing I have heard, and this is anecdotal, is that generally the cops will side with whoever calls first.
Oh my God. Because Are you serious?
This is what I've heard, and like I said, it's through stories. But generally the cops figure whoever has called first is the one who's there. Right.
So the it could be the instigator, the narc, one and the same.
But then once they show up on the scene, if you're perfectly calm and collected and said, Junior threw a rock at my car and I just got out to get some sort of explanation or get insurance information from his parents or something.
Insurance information?
I don't know. Well, I don't know what you do in a situation like that.
Just grab the kid and you slap him in the face.
Well, you do a little more than that where I come from.
Right.
Especially if you're in the van.
Teach him a good thing or two.
Yeah.
If this van has been rocking, don't throw a rock at
this van. Don't throw a rock at this van or it will rock.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Alrighty, number three. Memorial Day weekend coming up, and you know what that means.
Graduation time.
Yeah, graduation. It's either happened or happening. Summer is officially upon us. You know, this is Memorial Day always is the start of summer to me. Yeah, even if you're not quite out of school, you know it's a holiday weekend, and you know you're damn close if you haven't made it there already. Yep. So let's take a few moments and reflect on some things from school.
Well, one thing we can talk about, Inc. Magazine here has an article. It's called Five Things to Unlearn from School.
Not to learn.
But to unlearn.
Unlearn.
So now you graduates and you kids gallivanting around this summer, you've learned things, but we're going to unlearn with Inc. Magazine.
Real quick, they say things to unlearn. Why don't we help people learn things that they do need earlier on then, rather than waiting till they graduate and compiling a list like this and saying, hey, by the way, you should unlearn these things that we've portrayed to you as being successful.
Well, there are several reasons. You can go with tradition, the factory model of education.
Yep. We need them to be able to punch in.
You know, there's any number of reasons that you could speculate. Education is not tailored for everyone in every situation.
No, it can't
and really
be.
When you look at education and you break it down, you wonder, what's it preparing these kids for?
Right.
And I really don't know if anyone knows. Because it's not preparing them for the corporate world, and it's not preparing them for independent lives as critical thinkers.
I don't know. And the other part of it is this. I hear people rip on teachers, and I hear attacks on teachers' pensions in the news all the time right now. Look at it like this. The starting teacher is going to make like $30,000, $35,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take away the retirement fund and their health insurance potentially. Who the hell's going to get out of college with $30,000 to $60,000 in student loans and then take a job that only pays $30,000 a year that you have to pay for health insurance and all that for? I mean, how do you expect... It's just simple economics, isn't it?
It seems like it would be.
I mean, it's simple economics. If it costs you more to get into this field than you can make in this field, why would you enter this field?
Right.
If I told you it was going to cost you $30,000 to get your truck driving license, would you get your truck driving license and go drive a truck if you were going to make $30,000?
The funny thing is you can probably make more than $30,000 as an effective trucker.
Probably.
If you were on a team.
Yeah, probably. So, anyhow, let's talk about the article from Inc. Magazine.
All right, well, there's a little intro here I'll read to you.
All right.
You spent a lot of time getting an education, but if you want to make it as an entrepreneur, it's time to forget some of what you've learned. You spent a lot of years in school. You learned a lot. Some of what you learned, you need to unlearn as soon as possible.
Yeah, so Inc. Magazine must be like business oriented, I'm assuming. So
yeah,
like,
incorporated, yeah, so, probably.
So they're saying this is for entrepreneurs. Perhaps it applies to everybody. Mm-hmm. Let's talk. What's number one, number three?
Here are the five key attitudes you should adopt instead. Number one, if you only do what you're told, you will excel.
Okay, so you need to unlearn that. If you only do what you're told, you'll excel. Yeah, obviously, right? Don't people get programmed like, this is due on Friday, turn it in on Friday, you turn it in on Friday, you get an A+.
Well, it's the same thing we just talked about. We've got these problems, these five things, and maybe more, that need to be unlearned, that we keep teaching to children. Why? Because we keep doing what we're told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird because, you know, kids are, they like specific guidelines, and I think everyone does, but if you tell the kid, hey, you need to turn in a half-page essay on Friday, they're going to turn in a half-page essay on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to expect 100% if they think they did a good job because you said a half-page essay on Friday.
Right.
So, in a way, I think it's pretty obvious that the basic school structure, and I think college does this too, they teach you that if you just do what they tell you to do, you'll excel. And I think that's a good point. It, you know, in a career after that, people are going to expect you to fill multiple roles and to help out when you're not asked. And to be a team player in many capacities in many fields.
One thing that every employer I've ever had has praised me for is that when there's nothing to do, I find something else to do. They don't have to tell me mm-hmm. to go sweep. They don't have to tell me to clean up my area, to prepare for the next day, to work ahead of schedule. I just do.
Right.
And that's an important thing for everyone in the work field to do. I notice people with a work field.
Yeah, anyway, the work field.
I notice people all the time that they just do what was told, and then it's break time.
Yeah,
and
they won't help a coworker out or anything like that. Like, that's your thing.
Yeah.
Why should I be doing it? I did mine. Well, in a roundabout way, too, oftentimes it'd be like, well, if you help me do this now, it will make life easier for you down the road.
Yes. And the day goes by faster the busier you are.
Yes,
now, if
sir.
You're busting your ass and you need the break, by all means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's entitled to and needs a break if they've worked hard.
Yes. Keyword being if.
If. But, you know, there's a lot of times that you just need to stay busy. You need to just... the more you hammer through the day, the faster the day is going to go. So it's a benefit to you. It's a benefit to the job. It looks better for you. There's multiple reasons to do more so than what you've been told, especially at work. Yeah. But even at home, if your wife or girlfriend has told you to do the dishes, I'll tell you what.
Or husband or boyfriend, let's not leave them out.
We can't. We can't. We don't discriminate against them. We talk about them all the time.
Nothing wrong with that.
And they're not here to defend themselves.
Exactly.
Who are we?
Yeah.
So if someone tells you, you know, I'd like you to do the dishes or I'd like you to vacuum the living room, well, while you're at it, why don't you do two or three more things? Because if you just do the dishes or you just vacuum the living room, they're going to be pissed and you are going to be miserable.
It's true. It's a weird thing where if we have to ask for it as humans, then we know it's coming, so it doesn't have the same effect that it should.
It's like on a birthday. If you ask for a present and you get it, good. That's what you wanted. But you, like, at least me, I prefer for someone to just kind of infer something that I would enjoy. And to me, the present is their thought that they put into it. And I could care less if it was good, although that did blow up in my face one time. I guess I should mention this.
Okay.
One of the first girls I ever dated, I gave her the discretion to get me something she thinks I would really like.
Okay.
And I ended up with the potentially worst present I've ever received.
Really? That's a big thing to say. The worst present. I mean, because aunts, uncles, you know, they get you the, like, ugly sweater or the weird, like, Civil War knife sets.
Well, the thing of it is, I've never been invested in those types of people's presents. Whereas the girlfriend's assumption.
You expect a lot out of.
Yeah. And I will admit, she put a lot of thought into this, and it was a very thoughtful gift. But the outcome, I think I wasn't very invested in the relationship as well at this time, so the outcome really just didn't do it for me. What I ended up getting after giving this girl all, you know, the freedom to be as creative as she wanted to be, was a photo album.
Sounds good.
Which is all right. Yeah. I'm not super into photo albums, and I guess now that I'm more electronic, I'm even less so, but... It was a talking photo album.
A talking? You open the lid? You open on a card where it's like, you know, like...
Kind of.
Caramba!
It was more like one of those... I think it was from Sharper Image. It was like one of those books you get as a kid. Like a big...
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And you push the button when you see Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, you push the button.
And it says, woohoo! or make some stupid noise that corresponds with what you're reading. This was, you had a number next to the picture that, you know, she inserted or whatever. You pushed one, and you pushed one, and it was her nagging voice saying, "Hi, honey. Remember the time we went to the zoo? Here's a picture of you petting that goat you thought was so cute." And then it was just like, when you get that tone and everything, it was just.
I like how you're calling her voice nagging.
Oh, it was. It was.
And she's just talking about the time you went to the zoo. It's not like she's asking you to go give her a foot massage or something. She's like, "Hi, honey. Remember the time we went to the zoo?" And you're going, "She's nagging."
It was nagging. I don't know. I don't know what I was looking for in that present, but that was not it. And it has resonated. We're talking 10 years later. And I still hate that gift. I don't know what
do you have it?
No, I don't. I think I gave it to someone. I deleted.
You gave away.
I deleted the noises on it. Oh, her voice, the noises, and I removed the pictures. I don't know what became of the pictures.
I was gonna say that'd be cool to bring it in for the podcast. It would have been like, cool. Oh, here's a picture.
I've kept a lot
three.
Of stuff from ex-girlfriends, but nothing from her.
No, that one's gone.
You know why? I ended that relationship.
Interesting. Well, and when you end it, you've got all the closure you need, right?
You're done. When you decide you're done, you're done.
All right. So, lesson number one, make sure you do more than just what you're told if you want to excel. I think we agreed with that, right?
And how about just doing something different than what you're told?
Yeah, mix it up a little bit.
Sometimes somebody gives you an instruction, and maybe it's not the best way to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
all right, what's number two, number three?
Number two. Being micromanaged is to be expected.
Yeah, okay. Being micromanaged.
Have you worked for a micromanaging boss?
I have. It's not fun.
No.
And the most rewarding employment usually is the one where you're allowed to do your own thing within the realm of the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to just go out and do whatever you want, but to do it your way somehow, shape, or form. I think everyone enjoys that. They enjoy the autonomy, you know, the independence that you get from that. And working with a micromanager can be really bad if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, a micromanaging supervisor or boss is fantastic because you can learn so much from them. But if you already feel like you kind of have a grip on it, being micromanaged is one of the worst things ever.
Oh, yeah. It's like being talked down to every minute of every day.
It is. It really is. Especially because here's what'll happen. There's multiple ways to do stuff, and you were kind of hinting on this with your comment before we moved on. Maybe do it in your own creative way. Don't just do what you're asked.
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple ways to get a task accomplished.
Yeah.
And as long as they're efficient, who's to say one's necessarily better than the other?
Right.
So to have a micromanaging boss sometimes is horrible because they think that they know the correct way to do it because they've done it before.
Right.
Which, okay, that's fine. And if you've got great input and you want to help me and you know you can make me more efficient, great. But if it's not going to make me more efficient and it's not going to make me more productive, you can keep your opinion to yourself for most of the time. It's really just like a way of them tooting their own horn and being like, look at me, I do it this way, I've done it this way, so I can judge you.
Mm-hmm. And it's a way of ensuring that things stay the same. You know, if your micromanaging boss happens to be the owner of the company or the head honcho or just the head of your department, he can ensure that that department is run the same way all the time. And there's good things that come with consistency.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
But among consistency, sometimes you need a little bit of a radical.
Yeah, there's stability versus stagnation.
Yeah.
That's really what you're talking about with consistency. The great thing is the stability. People learn what to expect and how to work together. And then you got to worry about them becoming stagnant, though. And is there any changes? Is there any fresh blood? You know. And then on the flip side, change can be good because it can be invigorating, but it can also be super unproductive because a lot of times people just change for the sake of changing. They hear about the new thing or the new way, and you're always trying the next thing. You never get good at any of them. You know, and that's a thing that, you know, in the business world happens all the time.
Oh, in the fast-paced world of today, just you know, the split second that information is conveyed to you on the computer and the attention spans that shorten, and now you know, you've got to click in so many seconds, it's got to load, or you've lost your attention altogether. All that stuff is sort of horrible that, you know, we can't keep our focus.
No. And we change so frequently because there's so much information out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of at an overloaded point. It's like that scene in the movie where they walk down the grocery aisle.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched Driver the other day. And there's a scene in the movie Driver, which is a pretty good movie. The camera work in it I thought was phenomenal. But there's a scene where he's walking through the grocery aisle and it's showing you his face. So like the camera guy is going backwards while the main character is walking at the camera. And you just see the aisle going and going and going. And it's like cereal or something like that. You just see boxes and boxes and boxes of cereal for like 10 seconds. We're just overwhelmed with choice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, too much choice.
And it gives people sometimes the notion that they need to mix it up all the time because there's stuff out there to mix it up with.
Right.
You know, think about food. People are always putting fancy sauces on everything and all this other sort of stuff. Sometimes pizza is just good as pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you don't need to put anything else on there. It's like, listen, pineapple and stuff like that is like, it's okay. But I'd rather just have a regular Italian pizza with some sausage and some mozzarella cheese.
Right.
So, all right. That was number two. Let's see, your favorite here. Number three, bringing us to number three. We're not going to get a number nine, are we?
No.
That's terrible.
It's going to be a while. Number three, your time off is the highlight of the year.
Oh.
That's something to unlearn. That seems like that would be something to learn, doesn't it?
It does, because we all like the time off of work. It allows us to pursue other things that we're interested in, whether it be traveling or family or what have you. But I think it's just a good attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if all you do is work for the time off, then you've probably chosen a miserable career in terms of your skill and your personality.
Oh, yeah. How many people are in careers that they hate?
I think about this a lot because you know people all the time who come home and what do they want to do when they come home? Bitch about work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to come home and bitch about work as soon as you get off of work, why are you doing it? Why are you spending 40, 50, 60, maybe even more than that hours a week doing a job? And when you get done with the job, all you want to do is reflect on how you hate the job and the people you work with. That's just a miserable way to live. And if the highlight of your year is going to be, you know, that weekend vacation or your 2 weeks off or whatever, I mean, good, I guess, but it probably says that you've made a poor career choice if you're not taking any value in the job you're doing.
Well, and work so many times can be about the people you work with.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a wide variety of jobs where I had to complete any number of tasks, and some of them were dirty and nasty and gross, and other of them were just fine and but boring, monotonous. But what's made or broken any workplace that I've where I've worked is the people I've been with.
The environment.
And, I mean, I've had some just terrible jobs, but the people that I worked with made it where I loved going to work. Because I liked hanging out with those people, and I liked joking around, and we just got on like a house on fire. And the good thing about work was you didn't have to see them anymore when you went home.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I've also had coworkers that made it miserable.
Yeah.
To be there.
You know, that's an interesting point because I was just looking at it from the perspective of the career. In mm-hmm. terms of you choose a career, you should choose one that you're passionate about so that you can enjoy it. But you're right. The people you do work with, they can take something you love and make it miserable. And they can also take something that you don't really like and make it somewhat enjoyable.
Right.
So yeah, either you got to find a career that you really are passionate about that you enjoy because you'll find some value in that and you'll enjoy showing up to work every day. Or you got to find a job where you work with people who have created an environment that you enjoy.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Because, I mean, it's good to have time off, and it's good to have time away from the coworkers, and it's key to not only hang out with your coworkers or people with similar jobs as you, because that can cause stagnation, as we mm-hmm. talked about before. So you do want to vary up what you do off work. You don't just want to hang out with coworkers all the time. But it can be a wonderful thing to have friends in the workplace,
yeah.
and as long as it doesn't distract too much from your performance to where your supervisor notices, you'll be all right.
Yeah, because if you're comfortable with someone, you're going to be willing to joke around a bit, and if you're joking around, you're going to be having fun.
Absolutely. And you know, fun is going to just make you more productive, really, as long as you don't have
too it's much. Contagious. It gives you a good attitude, which is going to carry over.
This one is number four, and I think it's phenomenal.
Okay.
Number four, and you'll agree with me.
Okay.
Getting criticized means you failed.
Okay, we have to unlearn that if we're getting criticized, it means we failed. Yeah, I agree.
I wish I got criticism every other day.
Yeah, you need a little bit of it, and it needs to be done in a way that's productive. A lot of times, here's what people do, and I think this is why criticism is so bad and we all take it as a failure. What we do is we hold in all the things that are bothering us, that we see a person doing wrong, that we're unhappy with. We hold them in, we hold them in, we hold them in, we hold them in, and then 3 weeks later, we blow up on the person, and we've got a laundry list of things that we're mm-hmm. angry at them about, and why they're bad at their job, and why they're bad at a relationship, or whatever. When the immediate feedback that we often think of as criticism is really just feedback. Like, hey, you know, that's aggravating when you whistle like that when I'm trying to talk on the phone.
Right.
Something like that. Don't let it become a huge issue to where you bring it up a month down the road. It, you know, I once had a coworker tell me that if someone can't address something to you when it's happening, it's a non-issue and they shouldn't be allowed to bring it up later on down the road.
I agree.
But what we do as humans is we hold it in. We harbor it. It's one of those things where we carry it around, and then by the time we let it out, it's like that pipe with the pressure bursting, and it just goes all over, and it makes a mess. And the person it's directed at, they're going to feel hurt. They're going to feel like they failed in some capacity, and they're going to feel like they can't communicate with you now in the future, or mm-hmm. whoever this person is that's criticizing them, because you're telling them that they're a failure because you didn't criticize them in a productive manner.
Right. And I criticize people fairly often, and I'm getting better at picking my battles. But I think it's important to be critical of one's friends and the people who are close to you, and I think it's important to get that critical feedback back from them. Now, interestingly, I get much less critical feedback back from most of my friends than I give out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people don't like being criticized and don't wow. like criticizing.
They don't want to be the criticizer because, like I just said earlier, it's associated with all these negative things. And as I think this is just part of our society and our culture, is we don't criticize in a productive way. We criticize in a destructive way.
Mm-hmm.
We wait till it's a big deal, and then we criticize in a retroactive fashion rather than a proactive fashion. Where if we did it more proactively, it would be seen as us trying to guide and help and work with somebody. When we wait and we do it later, it's seen as us trying to tear them down and pick them apart and compiling this, like, you know, it's almost like you're going to court and they've got all this list of evidence as to why maybe you were the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes it difficult for a person to respond positively to it. And yeah, I think that is a good lesson that everyone needs to learn. I think you just need to get more people on board with it to go, hey, you know, a little criticism's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
A little criticism prevents you from being stagnant, like we talked about earlier.
Well, and I may be biased, because growing up, I took music lessons. And music lessons is criticism for the amount of time that you're mm-hmm. there. And it's not criticism to make you feel low right. or feel some like you're
sports.
Some piece of garbage. Sports is right. the same.
You know, you feel bad. You know, I think it's any hobby like that where you have a teacher, instructor, coach, or whatever. They teach kids that criticism is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And with a lot of kids, you know, choosing to not do that stuff because it's hard work and there's so much technology and all that, there's a good chunk of society that's missing out on that lesson you learn by being kind of put through the ringer and getting that immediate feedback, like, knock it off!
Yeah.
That sucks. Put your hand down like this. You know, that's not how you shoot a free throw.
Right.
You call that playing a trumpet.
Right.
You know, all these sort of things. If you don't ever get that, then how are you going to respond to it when your boss does it to you?
Right.
And your boss is going to do it to you.
I've had bosses do it to me.
And I've had every boss do it to me.
When I was weaker,
yeah,
it would really affect me.
Yeah, it makes
and
you freak
now,
out.
And now, when that happens to me, I leave the office with my head held high, knowing that I know I've done something wrong, and now I know how to improve it.
Yeah, the best way to deal with criticism, whether you think you warrant it or not, is to look the person right in the eye and go, okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they are trying to hurt you with it, when you just say, okay, thanks, you've doused their flame.
Oh, yeah.
And if they are trying to help you, maybe you've allowed yourself to calm down and actually take it in as being helped, which is what it should be, and you hope it will, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be something productive. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything out of it. But that is a great point. You got to be able to deal with criticism. And I think ultimately, we've got to start being able to give criticism in a more constructive fashion.
Oh, yeah.
So that it's not this bomb exploding on you 4 months after you started doing the things that warrant the criticism.
It's tactful, and it's got to be done tactfully.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've learned, it's called the compliment sandwich. Have you
I've heard exposed of this. I've also heard it called as the shit sandwich.
Okay. But, you know, you give them something good, and when you know about the compliment sandwich, yeah. You can tell when it's being done.
Right, yeah.
But you give them, you know, something good, some positive feedback. Then the criticism, right. Then some positive. Like, and it sort of cushions the blow.
It's like, listen, you're a great person, but you cheat on me all the time, you're a bitch, and you nag at all my friends, so I'm going to have to break up, but it's not you, it's me.
I can't believe you would say that to me.
Right, I know.
You're an asshole.
Yeah, see, but that's how you do it.
I thought we had
every breakup starts out in that format.
Mm-hmm.
It always starts out with the slightly good thing, the bad stuff, and then you try to end on a positive note.
Yeah.
That is the opinion. People give the compliment sandwich without realizing it every time they break up.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to do.
Yeah.
But anymore, I just cut right to the quick. And I cut right to the quick with everybody. If I ask
cut right to the quick. I like that. That's a motto of the Quick Fast Podcast.
Yeah. Cut to the quick.
Cut to the quick.
With number 3 and number 9.
Yeah, there you go.
We cut to the quick.
Yes, we do.
But
quick to the cut.
We are quick to the cut. When I ask a girl on a date, I cut to the quick.
Yeah.
I say, hey, do you have a boyfriend?
Mm-hmm.
If they say no or yes, would you like to hang out with me sometime?
You're letting them know your interest right away.
In fact, I do. And if they say yes, I always double check.
Are
because
you sure?
Why would you, because people will say yes just because they think that's
what
you want.
Yeah, well, because you're putting them on the spot and they can't give you the criticism.
Right.
They can't just be like, you're not really my type.
Right.
I see no bulge
in those jeans. Yeah, I like a guy with a bit of a bulge.
Right, yeah. How many push-ups can you do?
No, not enough.
Not
I
enough,
guarantee
right,
if there's
yeah,
a push-up
exactly.
question, I can't do enough.
You're not going to pass.
Damn it. I know.
All right. Well, that was a pretty solid one. We got one more left.
Yeah. And number 5. States that success is based on towing the line.
Okay. You need to unlearn that success is based on towing the line. Kind of staying in the middle. Not picking a side, right? What do they call that?
Well, following the rules, mainly.
Towing the line.
Towing the line would be like you always being following the letter of the law.
Yeah,
and all
like
of the
a goody two-shoes, stuff like that. Yeah.
Right.
I think that aggravates people, ultimately. There's a little bit of an element where bosses and people in authority want their ass kissed a little bit.
Right.
But I think ultimately what they want is creative thinkers around them. Oh, let me rephrase. Hold on. I just dorked them. Bad bosses who are insecure really want people to kiss their ass all the time because
mm-hmm.
it validates them and they're not comfortable dealing with the challenge of someone more intellectual than they are.
Right.
Good bosses want to create the best environment for people.
Yeah.
And since they're talking about students, I'm sure the best teachers out there are the ones who like it when students challenge what they're saying. Not just to do it to challenge it, but to like, you know, take things at their own initiative to question whether or not, are you stereotyping? Are you typecasting? Are you doing things the right way for the right reasons?
Mm-hmm.
I think really, really good leaders like that because it shows that there's leadership potential in the people they're working with.
Here's one thing to sort of tie these both together that happens to me often. When I criticize someone, they'll get angry with me. And I will respond that you can be angry with me if you can tell me that I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. You shouldn't be mad at someone for saying something that is true.
Right. The truth should always, even if it hurts you,
mm-hmm.
if it's the truth, it's the truth, man.
Yeah, I know you're not a huge sports guy. I remember when I asked you on episode 1 who you thought would win the Super Bowl, and you responded by asking me who was in the Super Bowl that day.
And I don't remember who I said, but I know they lost.
They did. It was the Patriots. Well, which ties into my point here. Bill Parcells, okay, he was the coach of the New York Giants. They won a couple Super Bowls. He had Bill Belichick, who you like because he's a cheater.
I do
who
like a cheater. Right. Who does not toe the line.
He does not.
I'm down with him.
Yeah, okay. He was the coach on his staff. Then when Bill Parcells was with the Patriots, Sean Payton, who was the head coach of the Saints, still is, but he's suspended for the year. He got suspended for they had bounties out on players. where
oh,
they were.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Well, anyhow, Sean Payton was one of Bill Belichick or Bill Parcells' assistant coaches. And there's this big, they call it the Parcells coaching tree. The guy who won the Super Bowl, Tom Coughlin, used to be an assistant coach for Bill Parcells. So, like, three of the winningest coaches of the last decade in terms of Super Bowls, Bill Belichick, Sean Payton, and Tom Coughlin, all coached under Bill Parcells. They were assistants for him. Now, obviously, Bill Parcells, he won less Super Bowls than most of them, by the way. Sean Payton only has one, but he'll probably catch him. He saw something in these guys that he thought they had good leadership potential. Mm-hmm. He didn't surround himself with a bunch of people who were just yes men for the sake of being yes men. He surrounded himself with people who ultimately have been more successful than him. And it's a weird thing because even though Bill Parcells hasn't won, you know, the four Super Bowls like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and all that, people still, I think, look at Bill Parcells with more respect in the football world. Because they go, this is was a great leader. Maybe he didn't always have the best teams, mm-hmm. but he was a great leader. And his legacy kind of lives on through these other people that he brought up underneath him. And he picked people who were strong personalities with creative ability to think, who would probably challenge him oftentimes, I'm sure, and wanted to do things their own way. And he surrounded himself with these people, even though it may have bruised his ego at times.
Right.
Which is, it's a great example of how you, if you just surround yourself with yes men who just, you know, toe the line and repeat what you say and regurgitate yes, no, yes, sir, you know,
right.
You don't get much out of them in the long run.
No, and I don't like those types of people around me. I feel like people like that sort of happen to be around me a lot of times.
Maybe it's because you're so quick to criticize.
Maybe. I don't
they
know.
They just tell you what you think you want to hear so you won't criticize them.
I have a fair amount of friends who will criticize me and call me on any kind of bullshit that I happen to bring up, which I do bring up bullshit, you know.
Everyone does.
Yeah. But I have another fair amount. I'm enabled by a lot of people mm-hmm. in my life. Even people that don't really know me.
Yeah, that's the worst part about it. Enabling is the correct word to use. Because when you surround yourself with people who just tell you what they think you want to hear, they enable you to do the same stupid mm-hmm. stuff over and over and over. And there's no growth there.
Right. And I can smell when they're doing it, too.
Yeah.
And
you
I
usually know. But the thing is, because they're telling you something that they think you want to hear, if you really do want to hear it, you don't always just buy it.
Right.
You don't always call it out for what it is. Because it reaffirms what you want to hear, there's a party that's like, yeah, that is a good point.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just saying it's a good point because it agrees with you.
Right. The truth can be dirty, but it's essential and necessary. Which yeah. is to say the same thing. The truth can be dirty, but it's necessary. There yes. we go. So, we'd like to thank Jeff Hayden for this article, 5 Things to Unlearn from School from Inc. Magazine.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I think for 5 points, a lot you could learn from that if you take time to break it down.
Yeah, and it's important. And I think the overarching message here is critical thought.
Yes.
Being able to think critically in any given situation.
Now, I'm hoping that this is for people graduating college, because if it's for people graduating 8th grade and graduating high school, they're going to go to college and they're going to go to high school and they're going to get programmed to do exactly what it says you need to unlearn for the next 4 years.
Well, the picture leads me to believe it's for people graduating the 5th grade.
Yeah, there's
but I
true.
Believe it's just
yeah, it's like a 10-year-old
based
student.
Picture.
Right, but yeah. I think
Swedish, I think.
I think you know what we're hitting on here though is a fundamental flaw in the educational system because we can sit here and we can go, you know, high schools, grade schools, junior highs should not be teaching these things because they're just going to have to unlearn them. But that's what colleges do.
Mm-hmm.
We think of colleges as these institutions of higher learning and critical thinking, and they are more so. But there's a lot of shit in college that is just do what you're told when you're told to do it, and you get the letter grade you need to move on. Don't do what you're told when you're told to do it, and we control your future, and we don't get to let you move on.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So you know, I think the whole system of education, it's one of these things where the reforms start when it's too late.
Yeah.
And it needs to be a top-down overhaul with bottom-up implementation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to reevaluate what colleges are doing and how they're doing it, and then work their way down from there so you know what you want.
Right.
And then we need to start when kids are really, really young with preschool and all this sort of stuff so that they can read. That's the basis of it all. Like, that's the foundation of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can develop these skills later on so that by the time they get to college, hopefully they don't have to unlearn these things.
Right.
Hopefully we've cultivated those sort of things in them by the time that they're reaching their adulthood.
Ideally, they escape the education system educated and not programmed.
Yeah. Hopefully they escape the education system with the ability to unlearn these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good article. I like that.
Or the ability to weigh the merits of
the thing. To discuss it. Maybe it's bullshit.
Yeah.
That call it out. I bet you that's what he would want you to do. You know, don't toe the line. Don't just listen to this article and think you got to do it.
All right, Jeff Hayden from Inc. Magazine.
Yeah. What kind of bullshit is this?
We'd like to invite you to come on the podcast.
if you
can afford a flight out here.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're based, but we're not paying.
Probably New York.
Probably. It seemed like a hoity-toity.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, come on here and defend your five things you need to unlearn, because we've got some questions for you.
Yeah, like why is your average sentence length under five words?
Yeah, you can't come up with compound sentences? It's called a comma.
Yeah.
You don't need to unlearn commas when you graduate, do you?
God,
keep a comma in there.
Texting would lead me to believe no one ever learned the comma.
Yeah, or the apostrophe.
Ugh.
It's, man.
Yeah.
It's just it's.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know. It can be confusing sometimes, too.
We could do an entire podcast on the poor grammar of texting.
Yeah.
It really reveals what people know.
Yeah, but in a way, I guess you got to tolerate the texting because it's such a low form of communication.
It's awful.
But it is. It really, like, texting is a below email, and it's way below phone call.
Oh, yeah.
And it's obviously below face-to-face. It's one of the lowest forms of communication for humans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sadly taken on the role of conversation.
Yeah.
It can be functional, like, you know, meet me at the place at 6 o'clock. You know, we're having dinner at 8. It can be perfectly functional for that. All right, here's a question for you. Is text messaging below the level of Facebook communication in this day and age? Which one would you say? I mean, okay, let's just break it down. Obviously, the best form of communication is face-to-face.
Yes.
Maybe what's next? Video chat?
I would say video chat's probably
number two
as good.
Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah, that's one way the technology's made it you able to be more intimate.
Yeah.
Face-to-face video chatting is just about as good as being in the same place, except you can't touch somebody.
Right.
Okay.
And you're looking directly at each other. Whereas, like, even in this format, we sit next to each other.
Right. Yeah, with the face-to-face, like a Skype, a FaceTime, whatever, you have to look right at the person because they can tell when you're not looking at them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's above the phone because I can remember being on the phone. Like, I could play a video game and I'd be, Okay, so face-to-face, video.
Mm-hmm.
What's the third best form of communication?
I guess it's got to be the phone.
I think so. I think you talk on the phone. It's a solid one, only surpassed by being in the same place or video chat.
Right.
What do you think for number four, then? This is where we're getting into it. You got email,
uh-huh.
You got Facebook,
uh-huh.
And you got text message.
We're leaving out ham radio?
Yeah, we can skip ham radio.
Skip ham radio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would go, you said email, Facebook, text message?
Yeah.
Hmm. I almost want to say Facebook is the next, and here's why.
Okay.
Because you can incorporate different media into Facebook posts and into whatever, and you can attach.
But you can do that in text message.
In email.
Yeah. See?
But when you link in something in Facebook, it puts it right in line with your text. So, hey, check out this article, and then we've got headline, picture, and summary.
That is the one downfall with text. Like, okay, in text messages, you can put stuff in there, but there's not a phone on the market that will smoothly transition from that message to another website or something
right.
like that. You got to copy and you got to paste. Email and Facebook, you can just click a link, go there. You can share knowledge, you can share opinions, stuff like that.
Right.
Really, in text, all you can really do is share a picture.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, Facebook is not a very good communication model or a format, but I would say, you know, email is probably better professionally.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking in my head right now, you know, email, you typically retain proper grammar.
Mm-hmm.
You typically retain a hello and a goodbye
mm-hmm.
or a thanks for your time. you don't get any of that in Facebook. And usually with a text message, what you'll get is a hey. It, like, that's about as polite as a text message starts.
Right.
Is like a hey. That's letting you know, hello, I know I haven't spoken with you in a while, or, you know, I'm greeting you.
Right.
Is hey.
Right.
You don't get that in Facebook.
No, you don't. But, you know, it depends on what someone's seeking in the type of communication, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually when I get a hey at the beginning, they want something from me.
Like, well, no one just text messages just a text message. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
everybody wants something.
People converse via text these days. That's what it does.
They don't converse with me.
Yes, they do. And I know you know what I'm talking about with this. Text messaging has replaced conversations that people used to have on the phone to a large degree.
Okay.
I think people are texting more than they're talking on the phone.
Oh, sure.
So it's taken that over. And in a way, we've downgraded our form of communication.
Yeah. And it's our preferred method.
It's the easiest. Now, the bad part about it is it makes you think you can have multiple conversations at the same time.
I've fallen into that pit.
Oh, yeah. We all do it where you're in the car with someone, you're talking, blah, blah, blah. And then you get a message. You look down, you text, you get up from the phone, you go, huh?
Right.
Your brain is built for one conversation.
Yeah.
That's all it can really handle at a given moment.
And we hope that conversation is the Quick Fast Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't text while you listen to the Quick Fast Podcast.
It's dangerous.
You might miss something.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, it's like that girl that walked into the fountain in the mall like a year ago. That was great. The mall, did you see that one?
I don't think so.
She worked at this mall and she's leaving work or something like that. And she's texting. There's this big fountain in the middle of the mall. Walks right into it. Right into it.
I'll tell you what, one time I ran a red light just thinking of what I was going to say on someone's voicemail.
Really?
And that was voicemail.
You were just thinking about...
I was thinking about what I was about to say, because I get nervous when I've got to leave a voicemail.
Yeah, voicemail does put you on the spot, because you don't have time to redo your shit.
Yeah, I ran a red light. And it was in the middle of the night, nobody was there, you know. But,
Alright, so let's rank the bottom three. We got person-to-person, mm-hmm. video, phone.
Yeah.
Let's give them the bottom three, with number three.
Well, we're going to say text is the bottom.
Okay, text is bottom. Below Facebook.
Below Facebook.
Okay.
I don't know where to draw the line between Facebook and email because of the two very different formats and the two very different uses.
Yeah.
Facebook
one
is casual.
Content-based.
Email is more professional.
Right, and Facebook is based on the content. Email is more based on the substance.
But if we're going substantive communication, email.
Okay, we can even call it a tie there, but here's where I think it's interesting. We said the bottom, the lowest form of communication that we have in the 21st century is text message.
Mm-hmm.
And what did we just say? Text messaging is replacing phone conversations.
Yeah.
So we're degrading our human interactions even more than we used to.
Yeah.
Not a good sign.
The robots are taking control.
The iPhones are taking control. I don't know about the robots. I guess the beacon of hope would have to be that the video chatting
mm-hmm.
is becoming more accessible.
Yes.
More people are probably doing that than ever.
Right. But I still don't video chat with very many people.
No. Because you know what it is? Because it takes your time.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to devote time to that,
video person.
At least on the phone, you can be doing other stuff.
Right.
And you know what it needs to just be? You need to just cut out some time to deal with people.
Right.
With your social life.
It's like sitting down and getting a dinner or a lunch with someone. That mm-hmm. is good
you
stuff
You can do that
to
over
do.
Video chat.
Yeah.
You know, cook up a good lunch and both sit there and eat your individual lunches with each other.
Yeah, this is kind of embarrassing, but
nope,
I was dating a girl who lived in a different state for a while. And she was big into Skype. She wanted to Skype all the time.
Mm-hmm. I know the type.
Yeah.
I think I dated her too.
Probably. It depends on which state at which moment. But anyhow, I used to Skype with her from the tub.
Nice.
Yeah, well, I didn't get any kinky stuff going on or anything like that. But the reason I did it is because I didn't want to devote a specific hour, because she was a needy, high maintenance sort of girl,
mm-hmm.
and I knew, like, if I got on Skype, I wasn't getting off until she wanted to get off. And if I got off before she wanted to get off, she would be pissy with me. The type of girl, it didn't last long, you can see why. But I knew it was going to be like a 30, 40 minute ordeal, minimum. So I just started doing it when I was in the tub. Because I figured, at least this way, I'm getting to relax in the tub a little while. And I can chat that way and all that.
Two birds?
I'm multitasking. You know, whereas before I used to play video games on mute while I was on the phone.
Right.
Now I'm video chatting in the tub.
Well, good. You found a way to get your ends where you can get your tub connection.
Yeah.
Your social connection.
Yeah.
Good for you.
And I was wondering while I did it, like, you know, how many people video chat from the tub?
I'm going to video chat from a hot tub soon.
Yeah. That's another day, another life, another story.
Well, that does it for this episode of the Quick Fast Podcast. I'm number 3.
And I'm number 9. And remember,
if there's no victim,
there's no crime. Thanks for listening.